birdnote.org. I'm Mary McCann.
KPFT Houston. You're listening to the New Capital Show with Leo Gold. Coming right up.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the New Capital Show. I am Leo Gold, your host. It's great to be with you here on October the 11th, 2012. Hard to believe that we are headed into the home stretch of 2012, but it's true. It's true. And the years just seem to go faster and faster. We'll be taking your calls a little bit later in today's show, 713-526-5738, 526-KPFT. You can find New Capital Show at newcapitalshow.com. I want to thank Ron Roeder, who has been helping me for several weeks to get all of our podcasts updated. And Ron's amazing. Ron is just typical of the types of volunteers who help out here at KPFT on a daily, daily basis. Ron called me a few weeks ago and said, "Hey, Leo, looks like you need a little help on your website maintenance." And I said, "Yeah, Ron, you're right. I am so busy these days. I finish the show and I go right back to work." And Ron has been helping me, and I can't thank him enough. So thanks to Ron for all the assistance. Of course, thanks to Doyle for his assistance on every single show. Thanks to all of you for listening, and thanks to everybody who helps out here at the station. So, newcapitalshow.com. You can email me at leogold@newcapitalshow.com. On Facebook, leogold.newcapitalshow. You're getting the pattern here. And on Twitter is leogoldncs is the Twitter feed. My guest today, and I'm going to welcome him right now, is Jed Emerson. Jed, I saw Jed speak at a conference in Denver over this summer in late July. It was a conference on alternative investments. That was the big theme of the conference. And there was a one-day session on impact investing. And I was very interested in this, of course, being a wealth manager, a financial advisor, and hopefully one with a conscience. I was very interested to hear about the subject of impact investing. I'd been getting emails from some different groups that I'd signed up for, and we've seen different incarnations of impact investing over the years. You probably have heard of socially responsible investing, SRI. I've done a few shows on that and had the people from Calvert on and Portfolio 21, which is a small group out of Seattle that I like, and there are others as well. But there's this new thing called impact investing, and Jed spoke at this conference, and he was great. He was the last speaker of the day, and absolutely, I found him to be enthralling. So without any further ado, I want to welcome you, Jed, to the New Capital Show.
Well, thanks so much for having me on.
So let's tell everybody a little bit about you. First of all, you're a writer. You've written a number of books, including books on impact investing, or three or four of them. You are the chief impact strategist for Impact Assets. You do work for people with money as well. You work with two family offices. There are some other foundations. You're doing work for NYU, Abu Dhabi, Heidelberg University in Germany, Center for. I mean, you have a very, very extensive resume in this area. Interestingly, you have a background in business administration and also in social work. So anyway, tell everybody else a little bit more about you that I haven't covered and what you think it's important for people to know about your background.
Well, I think, again, as you said, my background, actually, my career started in social work. I was the founding director of a homeless youth program in San Francisco called the Larkin Street Youth Center. And what I found, though, was over a period of years, I realized that the traditional way of thinking about change and having an impact on the world, where we kind of bifurcate the world between the nonprofit sector and the for-profit sector, you know, it just really wasn't working for me. I felt like the nonprofit organizations were leaving economic value on the table and for-profits were leaving social and environmental value on the table. And it just felt like something that was more of an integrated approach made more sense to me. And so, I ended up leaving the traditional nonprofit management and had a position working with George Roberts, who's a financier, where we were running a fund that took philanthropic capital and invested it in market-rate companies that were owned by nonprofits employing formerly homeless people.
Okay, so let's slow that.
We're right in the middle.
So
that's really the start of how I got involved in this.
So great. So let's slow it down a little bit. First of all, for those of you who don't know George Roberts, you may have heard of a company called KKR, Kohlberg Kravis Roberts. It's one of the world's major. In fact, it was the original, really, private equity firm. So here's George Roberts and you getting together to try to do some work in these areas where you've got ideas. Is that what happened?
Well, basically, yes. And I think George's interest is similar to a lot of business people where, you know, his success came from the free enterprise system and from a belief that markets are the place where you can create value. And his interest was on exploring, you know, how those ideas could be applied toward community ends and community goals. And my background in social work positioned me well for that as well. And so in the late 80s, early 90s, we basically started a conversation and then created a set of strategies to try to explore what would that look like to bring kind of business acumen toward community change.
I'm sorry to interrupt. 90, mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to ask you, with George Roberts in this project with him, what worked and what did not work from your perspective?
Well, I think, again, this is going back almost 20 years now. At the time, what we were trying to do was to create long-term supported employment opportunity for formerly homeless people. And at the time, and again, this is before welfare reform and you know, welfare to work programs had come online, really the only options for people who were in homeless shelters and wanting to rebuild their lives were classroom-based job training and placement offerings where the individual would go into a classroom setting for 30 days and then be expected to get a job at the end of that month. And the reality for a lot of homeless people is that they have multiple barriers to employment. And it really is unrealistic to expect people to be able to put their lives back together in 30 days. And so for many homeless folks, they weren't even getting into the door of these types of programs, which, you know, work for certain segments but don't work for people who have been chronically unemployed. And so what worked in our case was developing business strategies where the purpose of the business was to achieve a level of financial sustainability and to be able to provide supported employment for formerly homeless folks. And so out of that work, we started thinking about, you know, how do you think about the role and purpose of business in a different way? How do you think about the purpose of capital in a different way? And it was through that experience that then I began having a set of conversations with more people operating more on the for-profit side as, quote, social investors who were saying, you know, this is exactly what we're grappling with, is how do you invest for market rate returns? And, you know, here are a set of business people, you know, people are familiar with Ben & Jerry's, with The Body Shop, with Patagonia. I mean, a number of these companies were launched during that period really with what could be thought of as a mission-driven for-profit orientation. And so that's how the work kind of evolved.
Yeah. So the idea is, and the thing that you were working on was how can you create some sort of return incentive for somebody to invest capital to start a business, even if it has social aims and social goals, as was the case with you working with George Roberts on this issue of homelessness in San Francisco. Is that right?
Sure. I think that's right, generally speaking, but I think it's even more nuanced than that, because if you're a philanthropist, if you think about philanthropy as a form of investing, you have, you know, a certain amount of capital that you want to invest in social impact. When you make a grant, you're basically taking 100% loss on that investment, because you have the funds one point in time, you give the funds away, and you don't get access to that capital again. And in exchange for that, you're hoping that the nonprofit that you give those dollars to is achieving, you know, significant social impact, significant social returns. But what about if you could invest in a company that's a market rate company that was employing extremely hard to employ people as a core part of its business, and instead of losing, you know, 100%, you lost, let's say, 20%. And so it was you needed to subsidize the business enterprise. You would not be getting a market rate return, but you would still be seeing a higher level of financial performance than you would get from a traditional nonprofit organization. And so this area, it could be thought of as social enterprises, which are nonprofits that are operating businesses for a social goal. And then I would say that the next level up would be for-profits that are executing their business strategy in pursuit of full financial performance and return, but integrate social and environmental performance into their business plan and their strategy. So you could almost think of it as three different types of enterprise activity. And so that's really what I've been involved in now for 20 years, is working with different entrepreneurs who fall into each one of those three categories, and then working with investors who have capital, who most often are also engaged as philanthropists, and who want to try to leverage all of their capital for total performance and return. So for return that is in some ways financial and in other ways social and environmental.
Let's just take it a little bit in the realm of politics right now. We may expand it, but would this be something where, say, the Republican Party would say, well, we really support this because this is privatizing aspects of what were previously the government domain and putting them more into a private enterprise model. And, you know, we as Republicans think they're going to function better and they're going to be accountable to business planning and they're going to be accountable to financial investors. Is it that simple, or is it more nuanced than that?
Well, again, I don't want to sound too cute, but I think this really is an opportunity where you can have a true kind of bipartisan support for many of these types of initiatives and ideas, because, you know, to your point, it's a tool that is oriented toward free market, free enterprise approaches to social and environmental issues. And having said that, these are both investment vehicles and business development strategies that leverage private capital for public good. And so Democrats can also get behind these agendas, because they are ways that we're really driving capital for a common purpose, and that does generate, in certain situations, individual return to private investors. But they can also be structured in ways that create sustained and meaningful social impact for community and society. And I think this is why this whole conversation around impact investing has really taken off in the last, you know, 3 to 5 years, is that you see really a coming together of a variety of different stakeholder groups who see a common purpose and potential that it's really intriguing, regardless of where you enter the conversation from.
If you are just joining us, this is the New Capital Show. I'm Leo Gold, and my guest today is Jed Emerson. Jed is one of our nation's experts on impact investing and who has a long history in helping to build a whole new world, whole new area of investments into social programs that are, as he's been describing, for-profit or quasi-for-profit. Jed, as you were saying, in some ways, I'm assuming the last few decades have been a time of reevaluation and redefinition of the mission of all players in the social sphere, from government to private enterprise to nonprofits to thought leaders in academia. Is that right? And are we coming out of this period of definitions, or are we still redefining whose role it is to take on these social issues, social problems in our society?
Well, I think that we certainly are coming through a period of reexamination. And I used to spend a lot of time on this question of definitions and roles and responsibility. And, again, at the risk of sounding flip, I actually try not to get into those conversations anymore, because you can easily end up in these discussions around, how many social entrepreneurs can dance on the head of a pin kind of thing. And what I have found personally is that as I've had more and more engagement with for-profit business people who are pursuing social and environmental goals through their business, and as I've spent more and more time with social workers who are creating enterprises that have different levels of economic performance and value together with social impact, what I'm realizing is that I've become agnostic. I really don't care if I'm talking to somebody in a nonprofit or a for-profit or a hybrid organization. I really don't care if the asset owner, the person who has the capital, presents themselves to me as a philanthropist or as a market rate commercial market investor. All of these conversations really are centering increasingly around a reassessment of how we understand the nature of value, and a realization that value itself is whole. It's blended value, if you will, and that it really is a question of which of these different organizational forms, what of these different types of investment instruments can maximize the total performance and the total value that an investor or an entrepreneur is looking for. It should be the focus of our conversation. And it's not that, nonprofits are good and for-profits are bad. It's simply that we have different opportunities to use different tools to maximize economic value together with social and environmental impact.
And you've I think, coined the term blended value. It's the one you use on your website and a lot of your work. I'm assuming that what you're saying about blended value is the idea that that any of these activities, any of these projects, any of these social entrepreneurial projects, they require all parties to look at the net value, the net utility that comes out of the project to determine whether it's a project worth pursuing. Is that right, that we can't look at only the value that accrues to one of the parties?
Right. No, I think that's true. We're talking about understanding value on a more holistic, integrated basis. But the push for this really, I think, has come from for-profit managers and nonprofit managers who are coming up against the limits of a bifurcated way to think about value creation. And I think we're seeing more and more people who would accept the idea that business and investing have a morally legitimate role to play in addressing economic, social, and environmental challenges that we have as a society and obviously as a world. And that's really where I think some of the power of these ideas can be unleashed.
What would you say to those who might say something like, Jed, all this sounds fine and dandy, but the government, that has been the role of the government, at least since, let's say, the New Deal and continuing through the 1960s. It's been the role of government to deal with social dislocations and social problems, be it unemployment or homelessness or sickness and illness or joblessness. And the government can do a fine job of that if the government is funded properly, but we've got a whole bunch of people in our society who don't want to fund the government. They want to defund the government and insert themselves into the process that previously was the right of government. What would you say to that type of criticism?
I would say that there is and continues to be a critical role for government to play in this process. Mm-hmm. But if we focus on government as the solution, we miss an opportunity to have our communities and to have our own citizens be that solution as well. And I don't think that I think we miss out on a potential to really leverage greater resources and more power to create the kind of society that we want to have. And even in the heyday of the great successes of the New Deal, it wasn't simply that government does it alone. It's that, government does it together with other actors. And I think that if we look at the current situation that state governments and federal government are facing in terms of very real financial limitations, we don't have any choice but to look for additional tools to put in that toolkit next to the tool of whatever role we feel is going to be appropriate for government in the future. The other thing I'd say, too, is that if we think about the potential to harness mainstream capital markets, that the trillions and trillions of dollars that are invested every day simply for financial return alone, if we have the opportunity to invest a portion of those assets for financial performance with social and environmental impact, why wouldn't we want to do that? Why would you not want to pick up these tools and apply them for a more common end and goal as opposed to simply for individual financial return?
My guest today is Jed Emerson. Jed is the co-author of several books, Impact Investing, Transforming How We Make Money While Making a Difference, also Strategic Tools for Social Entrepreneurs, Enhancing the Performance of Your Enterprising Nonprofit, New Social Entrepreneurs, The Success Challenge and Lessons of Nonprofit Enterprise Creation and Enterprising Nonprofits, a Toolkit for Social Entrepreneurs. And it's my pleasure to welcome Jed to New Capital Show today.
I'm impressed you got all those.
How about that? We'll be taking your calls in just a few minutes, 713-526-5738, 526-KPFT. So, Jed, what is a social entrepreneur? What does this person look like? Who are they? Describe some of these people who you've met and worked with and assisted and helped them plan their businesses and help them think about how to organize their social entrepreneurial activities. Who are they?
Well, generally speaking, social entrepreneurs are entrepreneurs who take a business approach to addressing social issues and who are looking to be more innovative in how we address some of the challenges that we're confronted with as a society, as communities. If you think about Muhammad Yunus, who is the founder of the Grameen Bank in Bangladesh, he's in many ways the quintessential social entrepreneur who really helped, lead the creation of a multi-billion dollar industry within microfinance. Other actors within that same sector are social entrepreneurs as well, but Muhammad is often held up as an example of that. If you look at Dorothy Stoneman here in the United States, who's employed youth in renovating and building abandoned buildings in the United States. She's an example of a social entrepreneur. I think the thing that's interesting about this is that social entrepreneurs are often, our neighbors and, the people down the street who basically say, I don't want to be limited by the traditional way of thinking about social change, and I want to draw upon, again, that larger toolkit. And these are the social entrepreneurs that we're seeing around us increasingly today.
Here in Houston, we have a great success story. I'm assuming you would include Mike Feinberg and the Kipp School, which has expanded here in the United States, the network of charter schools. I'm assuming that Mike Feinberg would be a good example of a social entrepreneur.
No, that's exactly right.
You would include in that list. 713-526-5738, 526-KPFT. Jed, we're going to take a quick music break for just a second. When we come right back, I'll have a few more questions with you, and then we'll go to our phones. Welcome back to the New Capital Show. I'm Leo Gold, and my guest today is Jed Emerson. Jed is an expert on social entrepreneurship and impact investing as well. 713-526-5738, 526-KPFT is the number to call to get on with us in just a few minutes. So, Jed, this term impact investing that has been that's been growing. I'm seeing more and more of it. As a financial advisor, I'm getting newsletters, and I'm getting mailings from I think it's called the GIIN Network, I guess Global Impact Investing Network. And as I indicated at the top of the show, I met you at a conference on impact investing. What is that? That is the financial end of the social project, correct? And what are people looking for as investors in these social entrepreneurial activities?
Sure. Well, impact investing, I think it can be two things. It can be both a broad lens that you use to look at all of your investing across asset classes and investment instruments, where you say, regardless of whatever asset class it is, how do we think about the opportunity to create environmental and social impact through an allocation to that asset class. It can also be an approach to direct investing. I think that for those who originally coined the term impact investing, they were looking for the straightest line possible between their dollar and some sort of community impact that also generated a financial return. So if you think about microfinance, if you think about sustainable agriculture, if you think about affordable housing, there are a number of categories of investing practice that you can invest in and generate a level of financial return together with that impact. And so it's really two things simultaneously.
And where does social, people are probably familiar with SRI, socially responsible investing. Where does that fall along with impact investing? Is it part of impact investing? Is it different from it? Is it a precursor to it?
Well, I would say yes to all three. I think that, you know, much of impact investing has its roots in the socially responsible investing movements that began with the divestiture movement out of South Africa, you know, 30 years ago, or with the Quakers, or the Mennonites, or a number of different religious communities who said that they didn't want their investments to be going into alcohol, firearms, tobacco, things like that. Today's impact investing, many of the people that I work with and speak with, when they look at their public equity investments, they oftentimes will use socially responsible investment vehicles to manage that public equity allocation. Now, that said, if you think about the effect that a shareholder campaign can have on a publicly traded company to shift practices in terms of whether it's environmental issues or worker rights or any number of other things, you can have a significant amount of impact investing in publicly traded companies and participating in those types of campaigns. And so the traditional, if you will, socially responsible investors are often engaged in shareholder advocacy efforts that advance social and environmental issues as well. So that was definitely viewed as a part of that broad spectrum I was speaking of earlier, of the variety of ways that across asset classes one can have impact.
Can a rank-and-file investor, and let's assume that most people listening today to our discussion are rank-and-file investors, because most people in the world are rank-and-file investors. That's just the way that our society has developed. Are they able to make impact investments?
Increasingly, that's the case. I think that a lot of the impact in the socially responsible investing movement has traditionally been viewed as something that really is for, you know, either endowments or foundations or ultra-high net worth individuals. But over time, we've seen more and more investment offerings come in at the retail level, if you will, targeting individual investors at smaller levels. So, for example, I don't know that I want to get into naming specific funds, but there are different funds that you can find if you go to the U.S. Social Investment Forum. They list a variety of different firms that are offering mutual funds and a host of different socially responsible investment options for you. If you think about the fact that most families in America engage in some form of community philanthropy, where they're giving to their churches or their educational institutions, those same families could create what's called a donor-advised fund, where for a relatively small amount of money, maybe $2,000 or $3,000, you can set up an account at a community foundation in your neighborhood, and that money will come out in the form of these philanthropic gifts to things and causes that you care about, but the actual assets in that account are managed for impact as well, or can be managed for impact. The group, the nonprofit financial services group that I'm affiliated with, Impact Assets, has that type of offering. RSF Finance has that type of offering. So there's more and more options for people at the retail level. And then finally, there's also something called a community investment note, which is basically a fixed income debt vehicle that you can buy through your broker that's offered by Calvert Foundation and RSF Finance and others. So there are more and more of these types of things out there that really are accessible to people who, like myself, without significant personal assets, but who still want to participate in this practice.
Before we get to the phones, what are you most excited about? What are you seeing in this area that's most exciting to you, whether it's a project or an idea or a group? You've been in this area for so long, you're one of the pioneers of it. What today is really, really interesting to you?
Well, I guess, you know, there certainly are individual things that I'm seeing that I find intriguing, but quite frankly, what I find most exciting about the current conversations is that this has moved out of a niche kind of boutique conversation and has become part of a much larger parade. And there are more and more traditional asset owners and fund managers who are coming into this conversation. Private equity funds are doing more and more to integrate sustainability factors into their mainstream investing strategies. We're seeing more and more people participating in local credit unions and community banking initiatives. I mean, it seems that in so many different levels and so many different perspectives, people are really saying, you know, I want to know where my money is. I want my money to work not only for financial return, but for the things that I really care about for my family, for my community. And that conversation has just really opened up in a phenomenal way in the last 5 years in particular. And so that's really, you know, broadly speaking, what I'm most excited about.
And is it also the case that people are now looking at budget-constrained governments and saying, okay, if we're going to have budget-constrained governments that used to do the things that I mentioned earlier, you know, homelessness and joblessness and environmental protection and so forth, and if we're going to see government constrained, whether that's by simple result or whether that's by intention, people are saying, okay, well, the problems are not going to go away. We're going to have to devote capital to solving problems one way or another, whether it goes through government programs or through social entrepreneurs or through some other way. And so we can't just wash our hands in this country and in the world of the obligation to solve problems. We have to solve them. Is that also dawning on people?
Well, I would say that is certainly true, and I think on top of that, people are also recognizing that there are greater resources that we can bring to bear to address those problems. So, for example, one of the innovations that we've heard a lot about in the past 2 or 3 years has been something called a social impact bond. And basically, this is a debt instrument that is structured together with public dollars that basically carries the risk of new programs and innovations that government really isn't in a position to fund today. So, for example, if there's a program that has a unique way to prevent people coming out of prison going right back into prison, but that program needs 3 to 5 years to really refine itself and its technique, the idea is that you could use private funding to cover that experimentation, and if the program is successful, then the private funder would receive a percentage of the cost savings generated by that success, with the balance of the cost savings accruing to the public agency. And so it's an example of where we could bring together private capital with public dollars in order to not only provide services, but provide better and more effective services for people that we care about.
I think I recall seeing maybe over the past year that Goldman Sachs, our friends at Goldman Sachs, have been involved in that area and maybe have issued one of these social impact bonds. I thought I saw it in the United Kingdom that happened. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct. The first one was issued in the UK, but recently the Massachusetts state government has announced an initiative in this area. The Bloomberg administration has announced one that will be experimented with in the city of New York. I know of some other states that are also looking at how to bring these types of vehicles forward. So it's an interesting combination of taking, you know, financial engineering, if you will, and using it for a social purpose that I think is intriguing about this as well.
Okay, everybody, let's go to the phones. My guest is Jed Emerson. Jed is a national expert on social entrepreneurship, impact investing, and has written many, many books and holds positions in this area that is a very exciting place where change is going on in capital and in projects. Let's go first to Christopher on line one. Christopher, welcome to the New Capital Show.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Emerson. Appreciate you. Just give you a little background on myself. I'm in a nonprofit management program, national certification in nonprofit management at University of Houston. And one of the things we've been talking about a lot in the program over the last couple of years is this concept of collaboration. And I was wondering if you might speak to the idea of this social investment, this social entrepreneurship, and, you know, when you're talking about private dollars, private funding, investors, and so forth, in collaboration with nonprofits and programs that are already out there, what are you seeing, or what are some interesting things that you've seen, or how do they get together, or is the social investment strategy more for their own program and then not really collaborating with nonprofits? I would just like a little insight into how all that might work or what you might have seen.
Christopher, thanks for the call.
Sure.
No problem.
Well, it's a great question, and I think that nonprofit organizations are critical to being able to advance many of the strategies that we're talking about. So, for example, before I mentioned the community investment note, that note is structured as debt that goes out to nonprofit organizations providing housing, providing support services to people in need, and it provides an access to debt on terms that are more favorable than those organizations would get from traditional commercial banking institutions. And so it's a way where not only is the investor able to invest for impact, but the nonprofit organizations are accessing sources of capital that would not otherwise be available to them. And so the nonprofit sector, I think, when I have a master's in social work, and I started out in human services, as I said earlier, with running the homeless program. And I think that when I was in training, there was almost this implicit assumption that social workers, you know, weren't supposed to get numbers and be financially astute in terms of how we manage our assets. Whereas I think increasingly we've seen a real recognition that nonprofits have economic value, and we need to manage that economic potential for social impact. And that's really what this opportunity offers.
Are we seeing more? I mean, I'm certainly seeing it, but are we seeing just generally across the board, Jed, the imperative that nonprofits be operated more like businesses, with accountability and with governance and with strategic planning? Is that now something that's now assumed has to be the case to have a successful nonprofit today?
Well, I guess, I mean, I have to say, I always smile when I hear people say that nonprofits should operate more like businesses, because then, of course, the question becomes, you know, which business are you meaning? Do you mean, yeah, you know, Bernie Madoff or Enron, or, you know, what are the examples of, you know, such stellar business practice that we're pointing towards? I think we need to be careful in terms of this assumption that nonprofits aren't already being managed very well by people who are very sharp. And in fact, if you think about it, what business could be successful where at the end of every business you're expected to cash out all of your assets and start fundraising all over again? And, you know, that's really what we expect nonprofits to do on a regular basis. If they have, you know, too much money in the bank, if they have 6 months operating budget, I've seen some foundation people say, gosh, you know, come to us when you really need the money. You know, these are folks who are working under very tough circumstances in areas where it's very difficult. They don't have the ability to just issue shares, if you will, if they need cash. And so I first would just kind of ask us to step back a little bit when we think that nonprofits aren't being run very businesslike. Having said that, there are some very important business practices and discipline that can be brought to nonprofit management in order to augment and make that management all the better. And so I think that's really what we should be focusing on, is how do we take the better practices from business and integrate those with existing good, you know, nonprofit and public management expertise in order to really drive home the potential that we have for creating impact through nonprofit organizations.
We've got about 15 minutes left in the show. Let's go back to the phones and take Mary on line two. Mary, welcome to the New Capital Show.
Thank you. I wanted to know if the talk about divestment, if you're aware of the divestment movement to from the private health insurance industry. There's information on it on healthcare-now.org. And then when you go to that homepage, you go to...
Let me ask you, Mary, do you have a specific question about it for Jed? You want to know if he knows about it?
Well, I want to know if he knows about it, because there's a very active campaign. They work with the SRI in the Rockies movement, and a lot of them are very much into... divesting from the private health insurance industry.
Okay, Mary, thanks.
You know about it?
Thanks for the call.
Let me give you the website so that you can look it up.
Okay.
It's healthcare.now.org. Healthcare-now.org. And then you go to, there's a navy blue strip there, and then you choose campaigns. And then under campaigns, there's a drop down, and then you go to divestment from.
Okay.
Health insurance.
Thank you, Mary. We'll find it. Jed, what about this particular issue, private health insurance and divestment? And maybe if I could broaden out Mary's question a little for you, is there a role for social activism in social entrepreneurial activities and impact investing? Where does social activism come to reside in this new landscape?
Well, I think, you know, social activism is really critical to highlighting areas that need more attention and focus on the part of policymakers and people creating programs and new organizations. I think that a lot of what social entrepreneurship is about is identifying those areas where traditional markets have not met the need of either consumers or community, and therefore there's a need for a new business model, a new way to think about a particular problem in order to address that problem. And it's really, on the part of the activist community to really, you know, point out those areas and shine a light on those areas where both markets and traditional nonprofit strategies have been falling short. And that's really where I think a lot of these parts can come together, where, you know, citizen activists and citizen scientists calling attention to issues can then work with social entrepreneurs and impact investors to try to create sustainable solutions to those issues as well.
Is it your experience that things that ultimately become instantiated as social businesses, as social entrepreneurs, begin as a social activist cause somewhere prior up the road?
Well, I think that that there are certainly examples where that's been the case, but I think what I'm saying is more that impact investors are really interested in those areas where mainstream markets have not gone, where traditional market approaches and traditional nonprofit solutions really have not delivered the impact that we're seeking. And so it's really looking for those missed opportunities and then trying to understand, could you stack capital in a different way? Could you use philanthropy, below market rate, and market rate capital in order to make a certain investment opportunity happen that would not otherwise occur? That's really what I think we're looking at. And so whether it's the activist community or simply professionals who come together and say, you know, we're just not getting the job done here. We need something better. We need a better vehicle, whether it's a community economic development initiative, whether it's a business development initiative, whether it's a nonprofit service center that's structured on a different basis. That's really what we're talking about. And again, this is why bringing together different sets of stakeholders is so critical to this, because I think that, you know, it's the old saying, where you stand depends on where you sit. And I think different people have a different eye to these issues. And when you bring them together, you have a greater likelihood to being able to see, well, what a potential might be for success.
You are listening to The New Capital Show. I'm Leo Gold, and my guest today is Jed Emerson. Jed is an expert on social entrepreneurship, on impact investing. He comes out of the world of social work and business and is a pioneer in developing the models of new social entrepreneurship and impact investing. Jed, there are so many places where people can't even get access to market-priced capital, right? I mean, much less discounted capital. So many places that are starved and deprived of capital. Can you talk a little bit about the importance of financial capital and how people go about getting it in this new area of impact investing? How do people approach investors? If you are a social entrepreneur, what do you do, and how do you gain access to these pools of capital?
Well, I think, again, that the important part of the conversation is that traditionally we have thought of capital as either being, you know, market rate, risk-adjusted return capital. We want to make as much money as we can for the capital that we have, and that's the job of investors, versus philanthropy, where there's no consideration of the financial cost of philanthropy, and its only success is, you know, how many grants you made and how large your foundation is. We're really talking about the space in between those two extremes, where we're saying, is it possible to structure different types of capital and different types of philanthropy in pursuit of a bridging mechanism, if you will? And so the types of institutions that are creating those bridging opportunities are things like community development finance institutions, community development venture capital funds, various community banking groups, credit unions, cooperatives. I mean, there's a host of different types of organizations. there also are, across from them, I think, different types of capital providers. And so you have, you know, angel investors, you have investors who are oriented more toward companies that have, you know, proven themselves at a certain level and are looking for expansion capital to go to the next stage. And in each of these areas, there are specific types of organizations that social entrepreneurs connect with or that potential investors can go to as well. And so it really depends on the type of either business opportunity or social enterprise and the type of capital that you're needing to secure in order to help finance that enterprise in terms of, you know, who you go to as a social entrepreneur.
Well, let's just say you've got an idea. Let's say somebody listening today says, okay, the big thing that I'm getting out of the discussion that I heard today between Leo and Jed is all right, there may be some alternative ways to gain access to capital that I've not been thinking about, ways that I haven't been thinking about. Oh, I don't know what the project would be. Let's just say it's somewhere here in Houston, and somebody's got ideas, and they want to go about it in this new way. What do they do? Who do they call? How do they begin to investigate this area that we're talking about, this space between, as you describe it? Where can they get information about it?
Sure. Well, as is true of any emerging market, this market can be very fragmented, and it can be challenging to really find the local actors that would be interested in the types of enterprises that folks have. If you think about it, in the same way that you would as the startup of any either business enterprise or nonprofit, you're going to have some mix of either, you know, local individual funding and support brought forward by individuals who want to see this type of thing go forward. There may be foundations that have different venture funds. There may be nonprofits that will have a community development venture capital arm where they would finance these types of business opportunities. So there's a lot of different avenues that one could go. And the fact is you have to do your homework. It's not the fact that it's kind of a simple idea doesn't mean it's easy to execute at this point. And so what we're seeing is more and more interest in crowdfunding where people go online and they post their idea, their business idea, and they raise, you know, $5,000, $10,000, $15,000 in seed capital to test it out and see what they can do. We're seeing the U.S. government has funded a social innovation fund that is allocating millions of dollars at regional levels through different local organizations to manage in support of new social innovations that are being created by people in different communities across the country. We're seeing different organizations like Investor Circle or Tonic, which are angel networks made up of individual investors who are interested in certain types of mission-driven for-profit companies and are looking to invest in those types of firms. So you really, the first step would be, to my mind, would be to go online and begin doing some research on the type of business that you have, the type of social value that your business is creating, and connect in with Social Enterprise Alliance as one national network focused on this. Begin talking with different foundations or different angel groups in your area. That type of thing would be the first steps that you would take in order to see where you could go. There's also a website called Social Edge, which is a community of social entrepreneurs and impact investors that hosts discussions on different aspects of these topics, which can be very helpful in terms of both getting up to speed relative to those conversations and also understanding, you know, where other resources are. There's Social Finance UK and the group you mentioned earlier, the Global Impact Investing Network, or GIN. Both have resource websites that have various papers and research pieces to help you understand, you know, what this opportunity is and how people are approaching it. So there are, I think, a lot of different answers for how one would go forward in trying to figure out what the best route is to secure capital. But it really depends on the type of enterprise and where you're located and what the vision is for your enterprise.
So what you're describing is a very, very active, evolving situation online and on the Internet, facilitating contacts between social entrepreneurs and impact investors.
I think that's true, and there's also more and more regional and local networks as well. So, for example, last week I attended the SOCAP, which is the Social Capital Markets Conference. They had 1,600 people who showed up in San Francisco to talk about exactly these issues. There's Bali, which is a network of local economy activists who are business people who are wanting to promote local economic development and really connecting kind of business to local community and agriculture. There are those types of initiatives. There are social entrepreneurship clubs at different business schools now across the country. There are things called hubs, which are shared kind of co-working setups for social entrepreneurs. There's one in Boulder. There's one in San Francisco. They're you know, across the country and around the world. So there's all these different, very dynamic kind of places out there. Some of them are virtual, but a lot of it really does come down to kind of face-to-face connecting and collaboration among actors who really are wanting to go out and build this future together.
So what begins as an Internet connection ultimately results in people working more closely together, face-to-face.
And ultimately it results in meaningful, sustained impact in our communities for the benefit of our society. I think that's really the power of what this conversation is about.
Yeah. Jed, we are just about out of time. Tell people how they can find you on the web and follow you and get more information about you and your books and your work. And I don't know if you maintain links to these different organizations that you've offered to us today, but tell people how they can find you.
Well, sure. My website is blendedvalue.org, and my Twitter feed is @blendedvalue. Those are the two best places, and I post all of my papers for free on my website. I try to give away as much of my intellectual capital as I can, because I think it's an important part of building this field of practice together.
Well, you've been incredibly generous. The two times that I've spent time with you, the first time in Denver at the conference and here today to give us an entire hour, you're incredibly busy. I can't thank you enough. We've got about 60 seconds left. Maybe you'll tell people where you think this is going to be maybe 10 years out from now and out into the future, where you hope it's going to be.
Well, I think where it's going to be is this will not be about impact investing. It will be simply investing, and it will not be about developing social enterprise and social businesses. It will be simply good business management. I've really been struck by how many traditional mainstream business people today are recognizing that if they're not thinking about off-balance sheet factors like social issues or environmental issues that will affect their businesses for better or worse going forward, that they will underperform. And more of these folks are recognizing that rather than viewing these things as outside of their portfolio or outside of their business, by bringing them inside, they can actually contribute to addressing those issues, and they can, in certain ways, have value to those issues. And that's a very powerful place to be, and I think that's really where this conversation is headed.
Jed, thanks. It's a very, very hopeful message that you offer to us today, and I hope people are hearing that in our conversation. Folks, that does it for another edition of the New Capital Show. My thanks to Jed Emerson for giving us an entire hour to tell us about impact investing and social entrepreneurship. Thanks to Doyle Odom for engineering the show. I'll be back with you next week. Please remember our pledge drive begins next week. And we will be hopeful that you will invest in our social entrepreneurship here at KPFT. Please stay tuned for the KPFT local news, followed by Al Jazeera and Democracy Now! I'm Leo Gold. This has been the New Capital Show. Take care.
Nights on KPFT come to you from Latino Perspective. At 7 p.m., immigration attorneys speak with you on coming to America. At 7:30, join Nuestra Palabra Latino writers having their say for authors and poets speaking out on issues and ideas. Our Spanish language programming kicks off at 8:30 with Noticiado KPFT. News from Houston and across Latin America. At 9, Proyecto Latino Americano tackles local and international issues with sharp analysis, all in Spanish. And join Alfonso Rivera at 10 p.m. for Son Pacifica, Music and Culture. Later that evening, it's Voz de la Tierra at 2. This is Pacifica Radio, KPFT, Houston.
Radio Pacifica, al KPFT 90.1 FM, to Houston.
Unasikiza tisini nukta moja FM, KPFT, Houston.
Yawad hai Pacifica Radio, KPFT 90.1 FM.
Oh hai Pacifica Toy, kissing scene.
Chaliye, aaj hum sab mil karke is dharti pe shanti ke liye.
Jum tumbun na hai lin shithar, to ye lagda. Vir, jum tumla Pacifica Radio, KPFT 90.1 FM.
Yato.